You're listening to Oak Talk on GoMightyOaks.com. This is Season 3, Episode 5, and today is a special edition as we talk to two very special guests from the School of Arts and Sciences. Their dean is with us, Dr. Justin Murphy, and also one of their faculty members, a beloved faculty member, Dr. Stephen Kissel, who some of you may remember for our special edition podcast earlier in this season as we talked about the book, the common book for this semester, 1984. Gentlemen, great to have you with us today.
Glad to be here.
Likewise, thank you.
And as we talk today, and we're focusing on three major areas, in the School of Arts and Sciences, we want to talk about the history program, and I'd just like to talk to two of our history faculty members about just why they enjoy history and what is going on in the history program here at OCU as we cover that, talk about that. And also, both of these gentlemen are authors and have been in planning, in preparation, and have some material soon to be released, so we want to hear about that. And finally, as we record this today, no matter where or when you may be listening to this, at the time of this recording, we are preparing this evening for a very, very special joint showing of the movie Hidden Figures, which is a co-sponsored by the School of Arts and Sciences and School of Business here at OCU, and we're very, very excited about that. First of all, welcome, and Dr. Kissel, let's start with you. It's great to have you with us, and as we return to this, any comments about tonight and the movie showing as we prepare for that in just a few hours?
I'm super excited for that movie tonight. I think it'll be a great way to end the semester. It was an idea that Justin and I had been experimenting with this semester and doing a monthly history movie. And I just to highlight some of the eras and stories that we're covering in our own courses, and be able to open that up to our students. This is the first time we've really tried to do anything collaboratively with another school or another program, which makes it doubly exciting, because I mean that's the beauty of history, is it can transcend so many different areas of our life, regardless of what your profession is. So I hope it's the first of many collaborations to come.
Absolutely, what a joy! I echo that sentiment. It's just exciting to see this come together, and I believe this may have been birthed in a conversation in the cafeteria. In fact, maybe a month or so. Prior, and it's exciting to see this come together. And from what I understand, following the film, are you going to lead a short Q&A? Is that what I understand?
Brief Q&A, just to tie it all together, me and I think one of the other business faculty, just to field some questions and get some discussion going to tie it all together. Because there is so much, this movie especially, there's so much to unpack in it, whether you're looking at the depiction of the space race, or the civil rights movement, or the workplace environment of the 50s. It's just such a rich, rich, inspiring story. So it was kind of hard to pass up the opportunity not to try to engage, at least moderately, a little bit of discussion afterwards. But thankfully, the runtime is short enough that it allows for that this time around.
That's wonderful. Well, Stephen, it's a joy to talk to both you and Justin, not only about the movie, but also about the history program here at OCU. And I just, as a fellow colleague, it's just a joy. My office is just in the building not far from here, and hardly a week goes by that someone is in my office and they comment about how much they enjoy a class that they have with the amazing Dr. Kissel. So it is a joy to talk to you and kind of find out what is your love? Where did your love for history begin? And tell us a little bit about how you got into history and teaching.
Well, I would say that I had a few very influential professors at the college level that really started to make that come alive. And the more I delve into it, and Justin, I'm hoping you can comment on this as well. But for me, it's the stories and the human experiences. I think which historian even said this one time, they basically said it's even in the name of the field, his story. And when you start to explore those experiences, what it looked like, what it sounded like, it really makes it come alive off the page. It's so much more than just names and dates. I mean, that's where it starts to become relatable, where it starts to become inspiring. And it's why I will use every tool in the toolbox, whether it's anecdotes, whether it's period music or film dramatizations, if I think it's going to help a student to better appreciate that past and what it can add to our own understanding of our own identity.
That's a wonderful answer. Justin, any comments about that and your love for history and how you got into it, for that matter?
When I was 7 years old, my father, for Christmas, bought me a set of the American Heritage Illustrated Encyclopedia. There were 20 volumes, and you know, pictures, short stories, you know, age appropriate, but I read those and read those and read those. History was just always my favorite subject after that. And I kind of went to college with the intent on being a high school history teacher and a football coach. And then I had a class with Dr. Edward Byrd in European history. And I mean, by the middle of that semester, that's who I want to be. This is what I want to do. I want to become a historian. And like Stephen, you know, just fascinated with the history, the story part of it. But also just the lessons from it. You know, it's a common saying that, you know, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's things we can learn from how other people, other societies, how they responded to issues and problems, and we can draw lessons from that that will help us kind of analyze the present.
You know, all three of us here love Oakland City University. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be willing to do this podcast, but just to pour into students each and every day. I know just as we record this, we just finished Thanksgiving break, and Dr. Murphy and I were walking up the stairs together, and he mentioned not quite 1,000 miles, but some 900 and some miles that you drove to get back here. As you do that, you must be excited to just pour into students and your love of teaching and history. And you know, you mentioned in your own past what inspired you. What excites you about teaching history here?
We have small class sizes, and where I've been at other institutions that, you know, you never got to know your students. When I was teaching at Tarleton State University, there were 75 students in each class, and they were sitting in an amphitheater that held about 200. And in that sort of environment, you kind of do your job of teaching, but you don't have the interactions. You don't really get to know your students like we do here. And so if, probably the largest class we're going to have is a history class will be, you know, 24 students. And at some of our upper level classes, we'll have five or even fewer. And so we really get to know our students. We have a real, and I think our students have a real comfort level with us, because we know when, you know, if there's some problem that they're having, you know, they'll kind of share it. Or when I've had some health issues, I'll tell students, "Hey, sure appreciate your prayers," and students will email me, "Hey, Dr. Murphy, you know, we're praying for you." But it's the fact that we can give them more one-on-one attention that you really wouldn't do in a different environment where you've got, you know, 75, 100 students in a classroom.
That's well said, and I couldn't agree with you more. Any follow-up on that idea, Stephen? What excites you the most about being in the classroom with our student body here at OCU?
I would certainly echo what Dr. Murphy has said. Actually, I'll admit that the first time I taught a seminar here, and I only had, you know, two or three students in it, it was kind of a culture shock for me having a class that small. But it didn't take me long to realize what an asset that can be. not just for the professor, but for the students in the one-on-one time, and you get to work with them and know them as people and help them to really give them that, you know, that encouragement and that, yeah, that level of attention to help them to realize and to reach for their own potential. It's kind of smaller campus community like we have here at OCU. It's very much the sort of collegiate atmosphere where I've always felt most at home. One of the things that drew me here in the first place, just very, very personable, very community-oriented.
So you mentioned here, as we were talking ahead of time, a little bit about how important it is, the ways to make history come alive in the classroom. Certainly, you're probably better situated to do that in a smaller setting than you might be in classes of hundreds of students. But are there any particular ways that you like to adapt to any teaching approaches that help you to make history come alive in the classroom?
In addition to some of the things that I mentioned previously, you know, the film clips, the period music, the anecdotes, I've also been experimenting with just trying to find different ways to engage the students in some creative discussions and even assignments. You know, whether that is something like actually holding a mock trial for the Boston Massacre, just to try to show them just how difficult the evidence was for John Adams to work with. You get a totally new perspective of what he was up against. You know, the logistics of trying to research what a slave's life was like, or even just having them, you know, looking at a piece of film from the 1940s. And, okay, yes, this is an old movie, but look at this through the lens of wartime propaganda. You know, what is this going to do for national morale? What is this going to do to help us win the war? It helps you to look at it with fresh perspective.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned mock trials, they're close to my heart too. So we're speaking the same language, just maybe a slightly different subject matter, although there's a lot of overlap, I believe, in terms of the educational process, which is exciting. So, and that's a joy. Any other comments, Dr. Murphy, about ways to make history come alive in the classroom in terms of, from your vantage point?
One of the things I like to use quite a bit are maps. And we, when I first started teaching at Howard Payne University in 1991, we had very few maps. So I would Xerox a map onto a transparency, then I would take the transparency and project it on a wall where I had a poster board, and then I would draw that, color all that in. But now with modern technology, you know, you can find maps and pictures and pull that into our PowerPoints. And then we've got new technology that we just got this semester with these big screens where you can then write in different colors. Mm. So I can pull up a map. And then, you know, I can demonstrate, say, like the Schlieffen Plan in 1914, where the Germans attacked, where they kind of altered the original version, where the, you know, where the French attacked. I can kind of show those moving parts that a student would not maybe quite understand without having that visual aid.
Absolutely.
Probably some reason that I do that, you know, I do fine with, always did fine with auditory type classes. My professor at Southeastern, I was talking about, never wrote anything on the board. he came in, started lecturing the first day of class, but he just told such great stories. But the visualization helps as well when you can show, okay, well, this is where the, you know, the Germans made their mistake in 1914.
To engage a greater percentage of different learning styles.
Mm-hmm. What a
tremendous concept and a great way to do that. Dr. Kissel, did you have another comment as Dr. Murphy mentioned that?
I can relate to the whole maps. That's one reason I don't use them all that often, just because they are, and that's more of a personal thing for me, just because they are so visual and as such are a little more challenging for me to work with, but there are times where I make exceptions to that. Anytime I'm teaching the Revolution or the Civil War, you talk about the Siege of Boston, or you're talking about the Battle of Fredericksburg, crude though it may be, all it takes is for me to sketch out what the layout of the battlefield was, and you realize, in Fredericksburg's case, why this was such a suicidal mission. You just take one look at the battlefield and go, this is a fool's errand. Mm. In ways that describing it never really could achieve.
Excellent. Well, the other comment, as I'm hearing all these things, I'm thinking about the maps, I'm thinking about all these styles that you engage, it begs the question, if you had to pick right now, what would be your favorite course that you enjoy teaching the most? Let's start with Dr. Kissel. Do you have an answer to that, or you want to pass and let Dr. Murphy answer that first?
I'm so diplomatic with choosing favorites. Let's let Dr. Murphy go first.
For me, I say there's two courses that I love equally, and then there's a close, I guess, third, but the two I enjoy the most are the Reformation Europe class. One of the reasons I love that course, it's a course in which it's appropriate to integrate faith and discipline in that class. So being a Christian, this is something that's just a course that I enjoy teaching for that reason. If we're talking about my 19th century Europe class, the unification of Germany, there's not really a Christian context for that. So Reformation Europe, and then the second is my French Revolution and Napoleon class.
Wonderful.
And I kind of fell in love with that when I had Dr. Bird at Southeastern, and then grad school I did my dissertation over the French Revolution.
Let me follow up just briefly, because I think you hit on something there that I'd be interested in your thought on this. You mentioned, when I asked you your favorite course, and then you mentioned a course or two that you had that impacted you, you couldn't do that without associating it with a professor that you had.
And Dr. Bird and Dr. Tucker. I mean, that's just, Dr. Tucker's probably pushing 80 now. He's just had such a tremendous impact on my life. With publishing book projects together, encyclopedia projects together. The hardest thing for me with him was after I graduated and he told me I had to call him Spence. I mean, that's kind of sacrilegious. I mean, it was hard for me to do.
But the people, as we look back, and all of us, we could have a whole episode here talking about the people that have made a difference in our lives.
Amen.
That have invested in us, and we, as we seek to invest in others, it all takes us back to those who have invested in us. And I don't suppose we would be here if they didn't make that type of experience. And so I always tell students, I say, whatever you do, I want to hear from you in 20 years, because I'm living vicariously through your successes. And don't just make me proud. Make the Lord proud. I mean, that's who we're living for here. But ultimately, just follow what your God-given potential leads you. But I want to hear from you, so stay in touch. So you've honored these folks that as you've mentioned them today. And what a joy that is. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Dr. Kissel, you've had a minute to think about that. Any more comments and follow-up?
My two favorite courses that I get to teach, one of which I'm actually getting to teach this semester, it's a seminar on the American Civil War, which may sound ironic since that's probably one of the most, arguably the most turbulent time in our nation's history. But at the same time, there's just something about some of the figures that you meet, obviously Lincoln in particular, Grant, what these people went through, what they endured, what ultimately was sacrificed to keep our nation together, and the fact that they were able to do it. It's the question everybody has been asking ever since the American Revolution. Can this nation succeed? And that's a nation that, a question that really was never answered until the Confederate surrender at Appomattox. And just such a rich array of characters and music and struggle, achievement, heartache, you name it. It's just a fascinating, fascinating period to study. And then the second one I got to teach my first year here, it's one I hope I can teach again, is a seminar on the history of American Christianity, which obviously number one is a subject that's very near and dear to Oakland City University as a Christian institution, but just to be able to view, it's my research specialty, be able to view history through the lens of religion, the way that that shaped us, the way that it strengthened us, the way it challenged us. Yeah, I talked about it earlier, it intersects so many different arenas of our daily life, whether it's domestic life, education, pop culture, politics, law and order. And it's just a fascinating window to be able to gain a deeper understanding of who we are.
Absolutely. And you alluded to this earlier, but and you talk about your research passion and some of your research agenda. You're about to be published later in the month of December, which at the time of recording is just around the corner. And you have a book due to be published with University of Illinois Press. The title is America's Religious Crossroads, Faith and Community in the Emerging Midwest. We're excited. We're celebrating with you. And how might folks who might be listening to this archive podcast, how might they pick up a copy of this? Is it available? Will it be available on Amazon? Or
yes, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any normal book distributor in paperback, ebook, hardback. Don't buy the hardback. It costs like five times as much. But yes, available anywhere you would normally get books from. And I'm excited to finally bring this to readers. I mean, really, this is a project that, and it's based off my dissertation, and really the research goes back even farther than that. So it's been in the works at least since 2013 as a project. And so just the amount of time that's gone into it and revising it and essentially looking at the history of the early Midwest, the early 1800s, settlement of what was known as the Old Northwest Territory. Now, today that's Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Back when that was the northwestern corner of the nation, if you can believe it. So looking at the early 1800s settlement of that region, but from the point of view of how religion shaped those early communities, the way that religion provided that foundation, and not only contributed to the identity of those communities, but also the accelerated growth of those communities. It's rare that I've found a period in history where the settlement of a region and a religious wave of rebirth overlap so fluidly as you had with the Old Northwest and the Second Great Awakening, and the kind of the mosaic that it produced, the crossroads it produced with all these religious encounters. Just a fascinating story. So I'm hoping it's really a not only a fascinating, hopefully an inspiring read for readers, because those themes of community, that's a timeless theme. That is something that is still just as relevant in our lives today as it was for the first pioneers.
How exciting is it here at OCU as a Christian professional university to have two of our foremost professors to connect religion and faith and community and integrate them into not only their coursework but their writing. We're excited, and congratulations in advance. I look forward to reading a copy of this and picking up one as soon as it is available. And well done, Dr. Kissel. We're excited for you.
Thanks. That.
Dr. Murphy, you're no stranger to publishing, and you might have some other projects in the pipeline. Anything you'd like to comment on to our Oak Talk audience?
Yes, and again, this goes back to my relationship with Spence, my major professor. He's a military historian, and so I have worked with him on a number of, as an associate editor for several military history encyclopedias. And then he was editing a series called Weapons and Warfare, and I did two volumes on military aircraft. I think 2019 I had a two-volume work on the Civil War, analyzing 300 different primary sources. I have submitted everything to the publisher. It should be coming out maybe next month. It's a reference guide on the American Indian Wars. And then next year I'll be completing a reference guide for country by country involvement in World War II. And these are available on Amazon. I think the last time I checked, J.K. Rowling was still, you know, selling more than me. But they were, you know, it's been a lot of fun. You know, again, getting to tell those stories.
Well, congratulations, Dr. Murphy, in advance on your upcoming publications, and certainly continued success as you delve into those passions that you have and get to work with some of those mentors and to collaborate with them. What a joy that is, and it must be. You've been great guests today as you promoted not only history and the DNA of the history program and why others might want to be involved. It makes me want to audit a class in the spring if we weren't involved in so many different things. I wouldn't count it as surprising if I happened to sit in the back one day because you painted some valuable pictures. I'd love to see the technology in action and all the maps and all of the things. But instead of that, or until that happens, it's a joy to hear from other students who have the blessing of sitting in your classrooms on a daily basis. So thank you to Dr. Justin Murphy and Dr. Stephen Kissel for being our guests today. And you've been listening to Oak Talk on GoMightyOak.com.